comes from Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine, covering Maine's boats, harbors, arts, and architecture since 1987, bringing the coast as close as the mailbox, on the web at maineboats.com.
This is Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News is the only daily half-hour progressive radio newscast in the U.S. It's owned and managed by news reporters. Free Speech Radio News is an independent broadcast news organization with over 200 journalists who report from 40 states within the U.S. and 57 countries from around the world. You can hear Free Speech Radio News weekday afternoons at 4:30 p.m. right after Jim Hightower commentaries, only on Community Radio WERU-FM.
Boat Talk is made possible in part by the Red Fern Boat Company of Hancock County. Since 1982, offering maintenance, storage, and restoration for powerboats and sailboats. Also offering dockage on Mount Desert Island, redfernboat.com.
It's 10 o'clock on the dot, and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online everywhere at weru.org. Boat Talk with Alan Sprigg and Mike Joyce is up next.
Good morning. Good morning. It's the second Tuesday of the month, 10 o'clock. Time for Boat Talk here on Community Radio WERU-FM Blue Hill. Boat Talk is WERU's call-in radio show for people contemplating things naval with your hosts, Rusty Anchors, Mike Joyce, and Alan Sprague. Boat Talk comes barging in every Tuesday morning to tug some questions out of you that you may have. For the Boat Talk guys, you can call 1-866-625-9378 if you have any questions or comments for Boat Talk. We have a list of little items to get to and then some interesting people to talk to today, Mike.
Yeah, Alan is the punny one, of course. That'd just be obvious. And we're both self-employed boat builders, you know, and sailors, and we feel awful lucky to come in here and do Boat Talk. Depends on the audience. This morning, we're pretty excited. We're going to talk with fellow David Buckman, and he writes a column called Fetching Along in Points East Magazine. He's been cruising the coast in a $400 yacht for a long time. It ain't a big yacht either, and they go special places and do cool stuff, so we'll be talking to David a little bit. We do have a couple little news items and stuff, but I think more importantly, Alan, we got to brag up the Boat Talk cruise, which is the spring edition is coming up at the end of this month.
Right.
June 24th,
the Friday night. That's right.
A 3-hour cruise.
Yep. And it may be dangerous, but probably
doubt
not.
It. Yeah. I severely doubt it. Yeah. Smooth is the word that really goes along with the Boat Talk cruise. Now, we've done a bunch of them now, and they've been so successful, we're up to doing them twice a year, spring and fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the Sea Princess out of Northeast Harbor.
Sea Princess is an interesting boat. We've said it before, and we'll say it again. Giffey Full designed that boat. It's a very nice, water-friendly shape. It just slides through the water quite nicely. You know, it just has the good, solid feel that a wooden
smooth
boat has.
Yep. Yes, and let's back up for a second. Our friend Giffey Full usually sets in with us here when he's here for the summer times, but he's at a memorial this morning, so Giffey's not available, and we're sorry about that. Giffey makes us look older and wiser, if nothing else, you know. He being America's, maybe the world's most experienced marine surveyor, you know, but he's not with us this morning. But he did design that boat, and we have a potluck, and it's got a big old engine box. It's kind of covered, got bench seating for about 60 people, pretty much covered up there, and a big old engine box. There'll be a feast on this engine box, okay? And that boat is so smooth. I don't care what kind of issues you have about motion and stuff. You're just going to be tucking in.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a BYOB. And we just kind of hang out on the boat and we cruise up some sound, the only fjord on the coast of north, eastern coast of North America. We'll go over to Seal Harbor and visit Martha Stewart and the Rockefellers and look at the old osprey nest and just cruise around.
Oh, cruise around. Yeah, see, pass by other boats that are in the area on their moorings and make some snide comments about them, probably.
Should be a prime evening just before the 4th of July, you know. And Northeast Harbor, there's not a more boaty place. People want to be yachting in this end of the country. So we urge you to give us a call here at the radio station and book your seat on the Boat Talk Cruise. It's a benefit for WERU, of course, and it's only $20 a person.
It's great fun, yeah.
Kids under 12. They're not even $20. They're free.
Yeah, and they usually get to drive, too.
Think about, yes, and you can drive the boat if you want to as well. It's very, very easy going. And again, we've always sold them out. If you're thinking about that cruise, we urge you to give us a call here at the radio station. Give Chris a call, 469-6600, and he'll book you on the Boat Talk Cruise.
One of my favorite things about the potluck thing, too, is there are some very tasty dishes that come. So here's a tip when you come on the Boat Talk Cruise. Bring pencil and paper because there are recipes to be exchanged.
Finger food is good, but not mandatory. And we mentioned the BYOB part.
Yeah.
There's blankets for your lap, and you want to dress warmly and stuff on a June night. But, again, it's always been a good time, and we're kind of guessing we might be able to pull it off again. June 24th, 6 to 9, a three-hour cruise with the Boat Talk guys.
Yep, and don't forget your camera.
Yeah, I just got the sailing schedule for the rest of the month, Alan, too. I was worried I wasn't going to be here, but it turns out I will be. I'll be here for the Boat Talk cruise.
You mentioned that we are both independent boat carpenters and sailors. I don't know if I qualify in the sailor department anymore. It's been probably a couple of years since I've been on a real sail.
I might have taken you on your last delivery. Old Bracero.
Bracero.
Yeah, but he's dead and gone, unfortunately. Yeah. So I haven't been able to replace that fellow.
My favorite kind, the day cruise on a nice warm day.
Oh, and a ride back in the boss's jet. Those were the days, you know. But anyway, we're just like say, humble old boat builders, and we get to do boat talk here, and we love doing it, and we love to talk to you.
1-866-625-9378.
Now, I noticed that they are letting women onto submarines.
Oh, yeah.
You've come a long way, baby, and look out what you wish for is what I think I might add. And submariners, they're a strange bunch, okay? Everybody knows that. Well, women, you know, are allowed more and more places in the military. They've taken the first 8 women into the submarine academy. They're going to be officers because they'll have their own cabins and stuff. But, again, watch what you wish for, girls.
Well, I don't know. I bet you they're wishing that they could do it.
Well, it's an interesting career path. But like I say, submarines are just a strange. They're strange. They're well-known strange bunch. Remember the fellow we had that was he's a Maine guy.
David searching, Jordan?
Yeah, searching for a lost Israeli submarine.
Yeah.
But he has pioneered underwater navigation, which is a whole really cool subject because you don't navigate underwater like you do on top.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, that's why they're probably a strange bunch. Here's some people at the Lobster Institute in University of Maine. They've invented a new way to eat lobster. It's a domed platter with a slot in the top that allows you to collect, they say, there can be as much as 12 ounces of liquid in a 2.5-pound lobster. Think of a Coke can poured onto your plate.
The slot in the top, what's the difference of the slot?
Splash proof.
Oh.
I think it's kind of like a domed plastic dish with a slot in the top. That's what it sounds like.
Sounds like you have a little slot in the bottom for the juices to run down into another pan, maybe. But
here's what I'm thinking. That's a genius idea because, again, if we could make eating lobster just perfectly fuss-proof, that would be good. But I don't know that this
sounds... That's why it comes with a bib.
It could still be the invention we could make our fortunes on, Alan, because I don't know they've got it. There's no vacuum pump. There's no, you know, double bagging. We might be able but. That's in the news anyway, and if you're interested, at lobstergram.com.
Well, while we're on the subject of lobsters, just a quick note for people in the Rockland area, the lobster boat races are going to be coming to Rockland on Sunday. They're always fun to watch, the lobster boat races. It's amazing how fast some of those boats will go. So if you're looking for something to do on Sunday in Rockland, just head down to the harbor. I'd head out towards the breakwater myself. And
one of the best harbors to watch the lobster boat races at. Because you can get right out onto the breakwater and be right out in the middle of the harbor. And the boys have you know, the price of gas being what it is, the price of lobster being not all that good, catches up, price is down, expenses are high, and but the boys do love their lobster racing, and they will show up, despite, you know, anything else going on.
Yeah.
And big bragging rights on the fastest lobster boat and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's just a good time for them, too. I mean, that's one of the best things. And a tip, if you can pull it off, it is a really cool thing to bring a VHF radio to watch the lobster boat races.
Ah, that's a good tip.
Yes, because if you can find a handheld VHF radio, you can get in on it's like having the radio for the NASCAR, pit crews and stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. That's where all the action's happening on the radio there. So anyway, that's what we'd say about the lobster boat races. We are doing boat talk this morning. We're going to give Amy a spot to dial out here.
She has got David already on the. On the phone.
Does she? Well, yep. Let's say good morning to him. David Buckman, how are you this morning?
Amy's distracted. She can't push David up right now. We'll have
There's
to
There's nobody at the helm at the present time, but we'll be fine. We need to thank Amy. You know, she is the unseen crew member on the Boat Talk crew here, you know, and we literally can't do it without her. One room, she's in the others with all the controls and the telephones and switches and buttons and such.
Well, while waiting for that, I have one more website thing that's pretty interesting. I've come across a website called Sailors for the Sea. It's, I think, based out of Newport, Rhode Island, but they have members all up and down the coast who are ecologically oriented, we'll put it. They get together and do beach cleanups and pick up trash whenever they can, floating in the water. And they're also animal-friendly, too, so they're offering now a dog membership. If you want to have a dog be an official sailor, you can go to sailorsforthesea.org and check out their website and sign up, Fido.
We're dog-friendly. We are the hosts now of the Boatyard Dog Challenge for Maine Boats and Harbors Magazine, middle of August at the Maine Boats and Harbors show at the Rockland Harbor Park. And did you hear Dog Talk Monday morning on WERU?
That's what made me think about Sailors for the Sea, because I had just heard about that. And after I heard Dog Talk,
our friend Johnnyford from the 9 a.m.
The Dog Report
show. He does Scouting the Perimeters with the Dog Report. He has expanded into our territory, and I've given him a little warning, okay, that we expect a kickback at the very least, and we don't want, you know, we're not going to suffer any turf infringement here at all.
We got alpha things going on, huh?
Well, but Dog Talk, I'm telling you what, we do it all here at Community Radio. Anybody at the helm yet there? Yeah, I can't see.
Yeah, we're ready to talk to David, I think, now. Let's see if he's there. Good morning, David.
Well, good morning to you. I'm ready to be talked to.
Okay. All right. Thanks for standing by.
David Buckman, you're in home in Guilford, New Hampshire this morning.
A cloudy Guilford, New Hampshire, but things are improving the end of the week, so we'll be up to Round Pond on Thursday for a whole week or so, just cruising around Muscongus Bay.
And that's where you keep your boat. Now, you also, David, write a column in the Points East magazine, a delightful little boating news magazine that's laying around free everywhere in New England. I mean, from Long Island to, pretty much the Maritimes, that thing gets distributed. And write a delightful column called Fetching Along, and been a big fan for a while. Was interested to talk to you this morning. I see you've written a book, and it's called Bucking the Tide. Making do and discovering the wild New England and Fundy Coast in a $400 yacht.
Well, you know, a lot of people would wonder why on earth anybody would want to go sailing in a $400 yacht along the coast, but I didn't have any choice. I had $500 to spend on a boat. You know, that was it. I had the family and a mortgage and car payments, you know, four children, so we didn't have much to invest in yachts. You know, so I bought an old wreck of a Lightning for $400 and patched it up as best I could. Actually built a cabin on it. We started out cruising, sleeping under the boom tent, but, you know, the black flies were in there big time, and when it was raining out or foggy, you could only lay down, no room to even set up. So I built a cabin on it, and eventually cruised the entire coast from Rhode Island up to the Bay of Fundy to St. John, up the St. John River to Fredericton. It was a terrific adventure.
I grew up sailing a Lightning. That's why I'm here this morning. We fixed one up as kids and cruised around Casco Bay. I would never think of cruising it from Long Island to Fundy. But we didn't have a cabin on it. We usually camped ashore. How long ago did you buy this? How long ago did this all start, David?
This phase of my boating life, and I've been boating, I've been sailing for 70 years this year.
70?
Yeah.
70.
This part of my boating career, though, started when I was about 40. You know, I was married, and I subscribed to a couple sailing magazines, and I read all the sailing books. And, you know, I wanted to go out there and have some adventure. But, you know, I really didn't want to cross the ocean, although people have done it in, you know, 12-foot boats. But I thought it would, you know, it made more sense that, you looked at the New England coast, doing that New England coast and up into the Bay of Fundy in a small boat is a promise to be a big adventure, and it definitely was.
We'll talk about the advantages of size in a minute, but we ought to back up, I guess, to what we like to call the boat talk question, is what happened to you as a young child, messed you up about boats?
That was my father's fault, totally my father's fault. When I was age 3... he bought what was called a skimmer. It was one of those boats that you used to see in popular mechanics, you know, build a sailboat for $50. So he bought this used, probably, I think he paid $20 for it. And it was a scow sloop about 14, maybe 15 feet. Just way too much sail. It was very fast when the wind was up. And scared the hell out of me, actually. But then there were those days that, you know, we were cruising around Silver Lake, and it was just so much fun to go into these little nooks and crannies. You know, you put the centerboard up, and you could go anywhere. You could put a rowboat, and, you know, so that kind of got me started.
The sense of freedom as a kid, it's almost as good as being given a car, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I was given a car, but the car was a wreck, and so you know, I never learned much and got in a lot of trouble that way.
But a kid with a boat, like I say, can go places and do things and have adventures.
It's amazing. It's just incredible how, with a little boat like that, all these places you can go to that nobody else can get into. It's an amazing world. I couldn't believe it when I started doing this. You know, there was no stopping me. And, you know, we played it very carefully. And I spent about 15 years racing Lightning, so I knew how to sail a boat. But I hated racing, actually, as it turned out. But I loved to just take off and go places and put an anchor down and hang out and read books and walk along shore and just be really impressed with how wild this coast of New England is. You know, the coast of Maine alone, they say, has got 4,500 miles of shoreline. So to me, it was a huge deal.
Now, we like to also say on Boat Talk that all of this yachting is it's camping. We're going camping, you know, but it's nice camping. And kind of analogous to RVing, if you think about it, with a chance of drowning. And so you've been on the small end of the boat scale there, and that has advantages of scale. You can tuck into places, like you say, that are pretty shallow and special. But in terms of camping, smaller is not more comfortable. And you, for instance, I tried to get a hold of you last weekend. You were out with the wife, right? You guys going out for a week next week. You and the wife camp for a week on this little 18-foot Lightning?
On this Lightning, the longest sustained period that I was on that day and night was just under a month. And you know, the fact is, I slept great. I was very comfortable on it. I could set up in that cabin, and you know, I could cook under the boom tent. It wasn't spacious, but, you know, when you lay down at night to go to sleep or just hanging around, it was perfectly comfortable.
You've got everything you need, and you're about as snuggy as you can be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How do you cook, David?
Well, back in the Lightning, I had one of those little propane camp stoves. You know, one burner screws into the top of a little propane gas can, and that was it. And I had a fry pan and a little 2-quart pan, and that was it. That was my cooking arrangements.
Fully enclosed head with stand-up shower?
It had a nice plastic pail, and actually I got a solar shower, a small solar shower at the end of it, so that was quite
stand-up shower.
Yeah, exactly, right on the deck. You know, you had to be a little careful, but it was a lot of fun.
Perfect. And again, you've been doing this for what, 30 odd years now, and haven't suffered the compulsion to get yourself a 60-footer all gold-plated?
Well, this...
How's the wife feel about that?
Well, you know, I have to just go back and say that this account of the cruise and this lightning up the coast was a 6-year event. For the last 25 years, I've been cruising in a little Swedish-built international folk boat, which is a 26-foot full keel. Great little boat, good for single-handing, and my wife and I have cruised her up to Nova Scotia and up into the Bay of Fundy, up St. John, up the river, and up, you know, down east, obviously.
We are doing Boat Talk this morning on WERU, and we're talking to David Buckman, who has written a boat book called Bucking the Tide, his account of cruising around in a little $400 old wooden boat. David, I asked you earlier if we could maybe get you to read a piece this morning. And in the newest issue of Points East magazine, it's got a couple zipping along and a Zodiac on the cover. There's a little piece you wrote called Sheltering. Is there any chance we get you to read that?
Yes, if you can stand my reading.
Oh, I think it's a great piece of writing. So, you know, have at it.
Well, as you said, it's called Sheltering, and it's about...
particularly appropriate for a day like today, too.
Oh, and kind of a few days we've had lately. The morning forecast was disquieting, calling for a northeasterly sea, gusting to 30 knots before the day was out, and a gale to follow. Hurry Creek was no place to be in such a tempest. After a hurried breakfast, we raised the reef main and jib and shaped a course for Seal Trap and Isle of Ho, 14 miles distance, worrying that we should have left hours earlier. Rabid clouds scudded low as the Leyte lurched and rolled and corkscrewed away across the warring seas of East Penobscot Bay. Not one other sail was to be seen, though our destination was only 3 hours distance. There was a compelling drama to the scene as rain slashed down, an angry squall swept the waters into a fury, taking full measure of every minute and every mile. At length, we brought up under the jolt of Moore's Head, where I got the engine going. Lee dropped the sail, and we made into Seal Trap, carefully dodging lobster pots, for a pot warp caught on the propeller could be a disaster when the rocky shore was a boat length away and the depths were in the single digits. We held our breath, came into the little eel rut, and got two anchors down. The contrast was remarkable. Every second of our morning passage had been fully occupied and a horizon stirring. Time now seemed to stand still. In the Leyte's snug cabin was our world. The lantern flickered uneasily, the mast shuddered above the sound of the radio, and an unceasing roar of wind and slashing rain bullied the sloop around nervously. Standing under the dodger, I took in the battle of titans raging without. Not far astern, the empty sweep of ocean was whipped into a fury of towering swells and a spectacle of galloping white horses as far as the eye could see. I couldn't imagine anything more wild. Soup and crackers were calming. We accepted what was. In time, the radio and the book were comforting. Night came black, with a depth of darkness we don't know much about. It was like being afloat in space. The rasping drone of wind screamed, subsided to a roar, and screamed again. The dinghy skittered about, occasionally thumping the topsides. We played cards and looked up words in the dictionary. I don't think a glass of wine ever tasted any better. Rain drummed on the cabin top, and we could feel her snub up solidly to her anchors. I was up at midnight to put another blanket on, and three times more to keep watch before the dawning of another sullen day. Snotty winds still in full career. All that day, the following night, and the next morning, the wind honed itself to a cutting edge. We ate, drank, read, and had long conversations. Time passed slowly. We lived quietly, and what could be much better than that?
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Nicely done. David Buckman, and again, he's written a book called Bucking the Tide. A book, I keep saying boat. I have a bad head for that. But anyway, I'm guessing there's stuff like that in the book, David?
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, as I said, that this was just a huge adventure. You know, I have to say at the outset, I'm not the bravest guy in the world, so doing this was, personally, was a major challenge for me as well.
Well, that's another interesting part of it to me now. When we go camping, sometimes it's not always fun, okay? But we put ourselves out here in this situation. You've got, 30-knot winds, East Penobscot Bay, which is just studded with ledges, okay? And a lot of them run crossways to where you'd actually like to go. You kind of got to find lanes to travel in. You got to find a safe way across there. 14 miles over to Isle of Ho is not a casual piece of water. You're in a little boat. And do you ever say to yourself, why am I, here's the question. When it sucks, how do you like it?
Well, there's nothing to it but to do what needs to be done. You just, so that's where your energy goes, and you get pretty much consumed by that. So it's an interesting, very intense kind of thing that you can't avoid, and even trying to avoid it could be trouble. So you got to get on with it and do what needs to be done as well as you can. I mean, it's a major learning experience doing that. But again, it's a major piece of drama too to be on that coast in that kind of a day and just see the wildness of it. You feel pretty small.
The thing requires seamanship, which is its own reward, and been saying more and more lately that it's an incredibly honest place to operate out there. You can't mess around or you get your ass handed back to you, the competence that takes is built by experience, and again, can be very satisfying. Nothing more satisfying than to, take care of problems. But again, the background is that there is an element of danger, and disaster is actually not far away. But that gives a kind of nice flavor too, doesn't it?
Yeah, the danger is part of it, and I must say, when I started this adventure, I knew how to sail pretty well, but I didn't know anything about navigation. I was a main sheet man. All I did was haul the sheet in, let them out, and do what I was told. And so it was a terrific, terrifically large learning experience. And there are some times you just can't avoid these kind of massive learning events. And there is danger in it, but I read somebody who said, life without a little danger is all but boring. So,
Well, David, let's just set the scene here so people understand what a Lightning is. It's a small wooden boat. You built a little cabin on it. It has a centerboard, correct?
Yes, it has a steel centerboard. It's 90 feet long, 6.5 feet of beam, 175 feet of sail. And it's a fast little boat. It's a boat you got to sail all the time if you got a big, good sized breeze go up.
Here would be my point, though. Your keel boat, okay, it's like your punching dummy with the weighted sand at the bottom of it. You knock it over, it comes right back up. The centerboard boat, if you knock it over, it can capsize and fill up with water.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and a lot of people, as I was in the process of doing this, counseled against doing it because they can capsize. And I'd seen lightnings capsize many times when we were racing. Our boat never happened to capsize. I mean, we came breathtakingly close many times. But
no shot of adrenaline like that, I'm betting.
Oh, baby. But, you know, there's a way to operate in that kind of a situation. And, you know, and that's what you do. And you know, in racing, nobody ever thought of putting a reef in. Never, ever, once in all the years of racing. But I had three reefing points in my sails, and I had a little storm jib. So if it blew up, you know, I could adapt to that. I never really had a moment when I was sailing that 19-foot that I said, this is it. I never did. You know, I'd reduce sail, or if it was really bad, I'd go in and just wait for the weather to improve.
I guess that's your experience showing right there, David, because that's what I've learned as a sailor. We don't want to get in storms and trouble, but we, you know, but we want to feel good about, you know, displaying some seamanship. We're about halfway through Boat Talk this morning, and we're talking to David Buckman on the telephone, author of Bucking the Tide. And you could give us a call this morning, too. There's a phone line open if you'd like to join the conversation. That's what we do on Boat Talk. Talk to anybody.
The number is 1-866-625-9378. David, this is Alan here on Boat Talk. I've had this, I guess we'll call it a theory, for a long time now, that people are naturally inquisitive, and the desire to explore is a natural instinct. And I think that's probably something that's been driving you for the last 70 years, too. As you say, you like going into all these little places and just seeing things that you don't really know what to expect, but they always turn out to be interesting. And for our listeners who are maybe not so familiar with boating terms, why don't you explain what an eel rut is?
Oh, an eel rut is a tiny little hole of water tucked up behind some island in some very remote place that nobody can get into unless you had something like a rowboat, because they tend to be populated with rocks and ledges, and you got to kind of work your way along. And of course, in this little boat that I had with a centerboard, you could pull that right up and navigate in a couple feet of water. And if you took the rudder off, you could land it like it was a rowboat.
Yeah. Now, the reason we go camping, I guess, is to see things differently, you know. And I'm always struck that when I come back from sea, I mean, we've all got our little routines, okay, how we get through life. When I come home from being offshore, my routines look stupid to me, okay? The normal life looks kind of different to me. I turn on the morning news, and it just looks dumb, you know. And, again, it's a matter of getting out there and getting a different perspective and seeing the world from a different angle, and that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and part of it is the speed at which things happen when you're sailing kind of slows your whole mood down, and, you know, you live more in the moment. I know that sounds pretty corny, but it happens. You live deliberately. You tend to, anyhow, and you're surrounded by all this drama in the coast of, particularly the coast of Maine and up into the Bay of Fundy. Is a very dramatic place. I'm a New England native. I've lived here all my life, and I had no idea there was that much drama and beauty and wildness within a day's drive of where I live in New Hampshire. You know, whether it was up to the Bay of Fundy, I could be up in St. John in 10 hours driving, but it's, you feel thousands of miles from home, you know, when you're off in this little eel rut of a place tucked away with this, you know, you're all by yourself and nature and everything's pretty big and you're pretty small.
And let's talk about camping again. You can't drive down the Rockefeller's driveway and say, you wouldn't mind if I set up in your yard here, would you? But you can come into their front yard with your boat and toss out your anchor and go, howdy, neighbor, you know. And it does. It opens up a part of the state that is so magnificent that not everybody gets to see. You got some favorite spots, David?
Well, you know, I got a ton of favorite
couple
spots. I guess the one place that I just love is the Mud Hole up on Great Wass Island off of Beals Island, Jonesport.
Great Wass, pretty interesting spot there. I've never stopped, but I've been by a number of times.
It's very dramatic visually, and the Mud Hole is this little protected eel rut, and you got to have half tide or better to get into it or out of it. But, you know, once you're in there, the wind can blow, and, you know, you're going to be very comfortable, and you've got tons of trails along the shore. There's probably 7 or 8, maybe 9 miles of trails that'll go along this very dramatic shore, so it's got a lot of attractions.
You can drive to Great Wass Island, too, speaking of our little camping metaphor here, but still, like, say, name a couple more.
Well, you know, I love that. I love Cross Island up there just this side of Cutler. That's always a favorite. Another one that we just love to go to is in the basin on Vinyl Haven Islands. You have to get in there right at the very top of the tide because there's a little rocky little entrance in there. But once you get in the basin, nobody else goes in there, and there are several beautiful anchorages. One we call Three Eagle Cove, and that's protected from wind from any direction. It's just, if there were a hurricane, I'd want to be right up there. And it's absolutely beautiful and wild, and no sign of civilization on shore, and no other boats around. We've never seen another. Actually, we have seen one boat coming in when we were leaving once, and that's been over a course of 25, 30 years.
How do you, speaking of over the course of time, navigation, of course, is changing for the sailor. How do you navigate nowadays?
Well, you know, I've got a chart plotter. They're so good, and they're so easy. I love it. I mean, we started out navigating, you know, watch and compass, and did fine with it, actually. We never put her ashore or anything. Then we got the Loran was the next generation, and that was better, but the GPSs are incredibly convenient, and I've never had an incident where they haven't put me where I wanted to be.
Run into a fella down at Cape Cod last summer, and he had, I think it was a Hinckley Pilot, he had the biggest console at his wheel station, you know, TV screen with the chart plotter and the radar, you know, the whole instrument pod. And it didn't fit the little boat, and kind of looked at it, and he knew what was coming here. And I says, well, that's quite something for an old pilot. He says, well, but I can navigate and read the New York Times at the same time here, he says.
it is. I mean, it's really nice to have kind of that certainty of it. And, you know, it's such, so much fun to be out there that, you know, I don't find that it's not as pure as it used to be. I find it's perfectly...
it's safer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Not idiot-proof, but as some boating friends of mine used to claim, all you can hope for is idiot-resistant, you know, and they're always making better idiots.
It's easier to make mistakes. I mean, you can make mistakes with that just as easily as you could navigating with a watch and compass. And you can, you know, you do make mistakes, and you figure out, you know.
So, David, your Lightning was a wooden boat, as we said. Yeah. Have you had any fiberglass boats?
Well, yeah, our current boat there, our Swedish sloop is fiberglass, and you know, I like the fiberglass a lot. I mean, I love wood, and you know, I've subscribed to wooden boats since issue number 2. But you know, fiberglass is very practical, and you know, it's certainly It requires a lot of maintenance, but it's not as intense as the properly taking care of a wooden.
Mm-hmm. It is not maintenance-free, but it will suffer a little neglect.
Yeah, you know, in my boat, my $400 sloop was really, that thing was not, you know, not in the best of condition, and it leaked seriously. I had to keep a bilge pump right next to the centerboard trunk. At night, I'd wake up about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning and pump it, because, you know, the bilges of the Lightning are about 2 inches deep, and if you didn't work that pump sometime during the night, you'd get a very rude wake-up call.
Can I tell you why I'm here this morning doing boat talk, David? Again, no boats in my family, but the neighbors had a sailboat, and they sold it and broke my heart. And when they got this stupid powerboat, they got an old wooden Lightning, too, and us boys fixed it up, and we kept it off of Cousins Island, and we ride our bikes about 8 miles down there. And we didn't have a dinghy. We'd have to swim out to it. And it would sink if you left it for 2 days.
Yeah.
And it was always a wash, you know. So we were always riding back and forth Cousins Island, swimming out to that thing. And didn't we have a couple of good summers? And that's, like I say, I'm still trying to be that kid, so.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds absolutely, you know, so nice when you think about it, how many things you learned in that process. You know, things you learn to do and things you learn not to do as well. I mean, mistakes, my goodness. I've made them all, and some of them multiple times, and that's a great way to learn.
You got to take advantage of other people's mistakes, David. You ain't got time to make them all yourself. That's another thing we like to say. And, you know, so you and your wife, Leigh, are headed out cruising again this weekend. Where are we off to?
Yeah, I'm up to Round Pond on Thursday, and I've got a couple of projects to finish up on the boat, because I'm taking off for a couple of months and a little bit. And Leigh will be coming up Friday night, and we'll spend the weekend sailing. She'll go back, and I'll stay there. I'll probably go out to Damaris Cove and maybe over to Harbor Island and maybe up the Damariscotta River a little bit, a couple of nice anchorages up there, and just, you know, all weather dependent, of course. You know, you can never make plans with any great degree of certainty on this coast.
Nice. Well, David, we'll let you go in a minute here, but the phone's rung, and maybe there's somebody here like to say something.
Okay, we'll go to the phone call now. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk.
This is Mark up in, I'm in Burnham at the time.
Hi, Mark.
I just was calling. I don't know if you had discussed it yet, because I had some machinery running, but some good news for Maine in the boat world. My friend Gus Stringos, who is a resident of Skowhegan and sails the Bluebird out of Rockland, a 36 Morris, just won first in class and first in fleet in the single hand from Newport to Bermuda.
Huh.
Nice.
That's with Pope sails.
The single, the Bermuda 1-2, is it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a friend of mine, our friend Hank Halstead, won that years ago. That's a nice little piece of sailing.
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah.
He was, first he heard that he'd gotten first in class, and then turned around and he got first in fleet.
Now, this is a real Morris 36, a keel, not the day sailer.
That's right.
A cruising boat.
That's
yeah.
right, it's a cruising boat.
Offshore series.
And the Bluebird, he been deep water sailing since 99. I was lucky enough to crew with him on a Marion to Bermuda race where we both got our first taste of deep water, but he's been avid ever since, and representing the state of Maine real well.
Well, thanks for calling and adding that this morning, Mark. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Hard to listen to talk radio, even boat talk, when you're using power tools. We recommend you set the hour aside, but, you know, you do what you got to do some mornings. David Buckman, Buckman, let's plug your book one more time. It's called Bucking the Tide. How can people get a hold of you?
They can go online to eastworkspublications.com, and there will be all the information on that website, little bit explaining what it's all about, and a few pictures, and just a couple of clicks, and you can own Bucking the Tide.
Now, a full disclosure here, we interviewed you about your book this morning. I haven't read it yet. You said you'd send it along. I can't wait to get it, but Yeah. Again, and your work is available in the Points East Boating Magazine. That's laying around different places for free everywhere.
Most any mom and pop shop all along the coast.
Chandleries, hardware stores, buildings. You know, you can find them just about anywhere. Points East Magazine. David Buckman. Love talking to you this morning, David. Thanks so much. Look forward to maybe seeing you out in a real shallow piece of water someday.
That'd be fun. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Good morning. David. We are doing Boat Talk this morning. Mike Joyce and Alan Sprague. What were we again this morning?
The Rusty Anchors.
Yeah.
And we barged in every Tuesday morning.
Yeah. We come around once a month here on the second Tuesday, and we contemplate your naval issues and kind of like Click and Clack, splish and splash, not as funny as Click and Clack. So that's what we like to say every once in a while. What else we got going here this morning, Alan?
Well, one other thing I needed to mention is our friends at Ocean Renewable Power, the Tidal Power people.
Yes, down in Eastport.
Yeah, they're having an open house of sorts in Portland. Anybody down that way might want to go down and check out their boat, which is called the Energy Tide 2. They're going to be having an open house on the boat on today, Tuesday the 14th, from 12 until 8, and on tomorrow, the 15th, from 11:30 until 5:30. Then again on Thursday from 3 until 5:30. Their boat is at the Portland Ocean Terminal building, which is the main state pier. Just go right down to the end of Commercial Street and Franklin Street, right down there by the water, the main state pier, and go out on the Energy Tide 2, and they'll give you a tour of what they're doing on making water, energy, electricity from the tides. They only ask that you wear closed-toed shoes when you come on there, I guess some sort of OSHA rule or something, and that children under 7 would probably not be allowed on board, but still... Our friends at Ocean Renewable Power
talked to in the past on Boat Talk here. We claim as our kind of territory anything wet on Boat Talk, you know. Yeah. It's not just about boats. But
anything about getting kids interested in boating, too.
Oh, we're all for that. Here's a thing that's going on just about a month from right now, the second Tuesday of July, as a matter of fact, will be when it's ended up, down in Castine. On Sunday, July 10th, is the 90th birthday of the schooner Bowden, the Arctic schooner that Maine Maritime Academy has down there. And on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, they'll be having a very boaty time down in Castine. There'll be a parade of sail. There'll be 7 boats on the public dock. They'll be open for display. And then Tuesday morning, they're all going to sail away right in front of you.
What?
Castine, I've been hanging out down there quite a bit this season. Yeah. And you want to talk about a scenic little harbor with some history, boy, and a friendly little spot.
Yeah, and the Bowden especially has got a lot of history.
Highly recommended. Now, Amy was making some telephone calls for us. What's going on over in the wheel room there, Alan?
I think she's going to call up our friend Rich Helmke and talk with him about wooden versus fiberglass boats. He's online. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Alan. Good morning, Mike.
Rich, Alan was saying we're going to talk. I'm going, Rich. I got confused for a minute. I didn't realize we were talking to movie star Rich.
Oh, movie star Rich. Tell me the movie star.
Tell us about the movie first, Rich.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. Building the Andromeda, a 28-foot powerboat that we built for Bill Jenkins last winter.
At the shop of Chummy Rich, which is also known as...
Bass Harbor Boat.
Bass Harbor Boat, yeah.
Yes.
And you made a great little video of it. I got it at the Ellsworth Library. I was just charmed by it. But I was also pretty shocked, man, that you got a lot more screen time than Chummy does, for instance. Surely you're about the star of the show there.
Oh,
movie
I don't
star.
Know about that.
That's what I thought. And well done, too.
Great, thanks. No, Jeff did a great job, Jeff and Bing, putting that movie together. It was a lot of fun.
I thought that movie made it just about as plain how you go about building a wooden boat as is possible to a layman. Starting with nothing.
We were trying to accomplish that, but also not bore people to death.
Make it
something that, you know, everybody can watch and enjoy it.
Well, here's the thing, Rich. You guys hadn't built a wooden boat at Chummy's place for a while, had you?
No, it had been at least 25 years.
Yeah, been fixing out a lot of fiberglass boats and repair and all that kind of stuff. But so anyway, you built this beautiful wooden boat for our friend Bill Jenkins, and you made the video there. And what's been the result of that?
Well, I was actually out on the boat Saturday with Bill. He had some questions about the fuel system, and we ran out, and I went over it with him, and he just loves that boat. I don't know whether it was the being involved with building it. You know, he was at the shop every day when we built it, or I guess the finished product. He just loves it. He's tickled to death with that boat. And to get out on it Saturday and just stand in the cockpit back there while he was running it, it's smooth, it's quiet, it's just a real nice 28-foot boat.
Hard to be any happier for both of you, was it, Rich?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, nice.
Now, Rich, if you were driving a 28-foot boat, or two of them, at the same time, one was fiberglass and one was wood, how would you describe the difference in the way they go through the water?
Ah, it's interesting.
Well, it's got a different ride. I own a almost identical boat to Bill Jenkins. It's also a 28-foot Bobby Rich, but it's 52 years old this year. And I describe it as riding on a magic carpet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just smooth, comfortable. It instead of jumping over the waves, you're cutting through them. And the ride is just real impressive. It has a different motion in the water from a fiberglass boat. You know, it'll roll the same. It'll have similar characteristics, but it's softer. It's not as quick. There's something about it. You know, you were talking about lightning with the last gentleman. And I grew up on the Hudson River and did most of my boating at the Nyack Boat Club, and they have a lightning fleet. And I thought about the fiberglass versus wood. And there were probably more wood lightnings at the time, but no one would walk up to a fiberglass lightning and ooh and ah over it. But a wood lightning, there's something about it.
You want to touch it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something about it. It's got charm or soul or personality, whatever it is, I don't know. But it's got it.
My theory is when the boat is operating, especially a lobster boat, which has a good-sized engine in it, that the wood is much better at absorbing vibrations.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Years ago, we fixed up a Jones Porter. It was the last wooden boat that Osmond Beale had built down to Jonesport, famous builder-designer. And this fellow was tired of maintaining it, lobster fisherman from Millbridge, and he sold it, and so we rebuilt it. And he got a fiberglass boat that was just gel-coated, you know, all the plywood inside and out, gel-coated so he could turn the hose anywhere, okay?
Right.
He came back saying, "The damn thing makes my knees ache and shake. It makes me tired." I said, "It's like working inside of a snare drum, isn't it?" And that was, you know, everything echoes and reverbs in that fiberglass encasement that's absorbed by the wood, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think it's somewhat significant that the term oil can has come about, I think, since the fiberglass boats are being built. Besides the fact that resin is made from oil, the oil can effect of being down below inside of a boat when you're going through the waves and actually seeing the sides of the boats flexing in and out is a...
You can see it in your bayliner. It's a bad time in your wooden boat when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can smell it in a wood boat. It's when you get on board, you know, you don't have that condensation, that chemical smell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm working on one right now, an old sailboat. It's been pine tarred, and you go down, oh, you're just going downstairs. Ah,
yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, so have we made more business by building this boat and making this video?
I think so. We're planning on building a 34-foot Chummy Rich design this winter, and there's a couple people interested in it, so we've been moving forward with building the molds, and we actually got the oak here within the past couple of weeks.
But the boat's not sold yet, Rich.
Not sold yet.
That's very interesting. Huh?
Once we start it and people see it, I think it'll go quickly.
Build it and they will come.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my belief, Rich, that the things are turning around slightly for the wooden boat business, and the interest is actually picking up.
I would also guess Chummy wouldn't be doing that unless he wanted to.
He loves it. He loves every minute of it.
Nice.
You talked about our last wooden boat. We actually have it right here now, the Double B, Beal and Bunker's boat.
Yeah.
That was
built tour boat.
25 or 26 years ago, and the thing is just in excellent condition. And you look at a 26-year-old fiberglass boat that's been used commercially, and it's going to have the same wear and tear. But it's, you know, they're good boats. Mine's 50-some-odd years old, and it's all built with cedar and oak and bronze, and 50 years from now, you take it apart and start over again.
Yeah, and they're all renewable pieces when you get right down to it, if they don't tend to last forever.
A friend of mine who is a lobster fisherman in Bass Harbor has a 35-year-old fiberglass boat, and the insurance company won't insure it anymore. They say it's too old.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's issues with those 30-year-old glass boats, you know, what they used for a core, how it was put together.
And used hard.
And some of them that come through here, you know, it's hard to work on them. Servicing a stern post and an old lobster boat, you knock out a piece of oak and get it back in there, fit it, align it.
Yep.
Glass boat, when that outer box starts moving around, and you know, you've got problems, and it's not cheap to work on them.
Rich, we're coming up to the end of Boat Talk this morning. You're talking about hard work there. I got to crawl under an old wooden boat on a trailer this morning in the sand and paint the bottom. What are you doing in the shop today?
I am working on a beautiful little 19-foot wooden sailboat.
I saw that.
But not under it. Like I see, I was.
It's
not under it.
Yeah, I was trying to tell you, you might be lucky today.
But if it's wood, it's good.
Nice. All right, Rich Helmke is down to Bass Harbor Boat this morning, Chummy Rich's shop over there in Bernard, Maine.
Yeah,
backside of Mount Desert Island.
Wooden boat point too. I'd like to make is it's about as close as you can come to shopping local here in Maine too. Because where's the cedar come from? Where's the oak come from? And where does the fiberglass resin come from? Think about that.
Good local stuff. Thanks this morning, Rich. Back to work, man.
All right, take care, guys.
Thank you, Rich.
And we are coming up on the end of Boat Talk. We need to plug the cruise again real quick, Alan. They're playing us out here.
Yep, the Boat Talk cruise. We got 50 seats available. Well, we've sold out. I don't know how many, but quite a few already. It always is a sellout. The Boat Talk cruise is on Friday, June 24th, leaving Northeast Harbor Town Dock at 6 p.m., going out for about a three-hour cruise, coming back just about sunset, so we'll have some real pretty sunset pictures and some good stories that Mike and I will make up along the way.
Yeah, Alan Sprague, Mike Joyce, Boat Talk guys will be there. Give us a call at the radio station, 469-6600. You want to sign up for that. And bring the kids for free. Make something good to eat. BYOB. Thanks. Second Tuesday, we'll be back next month.
Stay tuned for Jim Pahoosh coming up next with On the Wing here at Community Radio, WERU-FM Blue Hill, 89.9 up in Bangor, and around the whole oceans everywhere at weru.org.
Support for Boat Talk comes from Gamble and Hunter Sailmakers.